Hello, everybody, and welcome back into another episode of the Hockey Writers Roundtable here. We're keeping with the season previews, so we're up to the Edmonton Oilers now, and I have got two writers from the Hockey Writers here, Jim Parsons, Mike Cranwell. You know Jim from many videos on here, but Mike, you're a newcomer here. How's it going?
Doing well. Happy to having to get a chance to sit down with you guys. I feel a little underdressed. Jim's got all the hockey garb going on, and I'm simply representing Doug Gilmore, as I always tend to, because if you can choose fashions as an adult, why not choose a retired NHL player's fashion line?
For sure. Well, thanks for coming on the show. And Jim, how's it going? Season's almost here.
Good. I'm excited about what's going on here. Just so that Mike is aware, if you could see the bottom half of me too, then you would know there is more Oilers stuff to go, but I won't be showing everybody that in this video today. We'll just keep it to the hoodie and the hat and the pictures behind me. But yes, I am a Oilers fan, and I think most of the merchandise I own probably has a logo or two on there.
Well, that's awesome. Well, as you know, we're going to Edmonton Oilers here. Had a really good season last year. They got into the second round, couldn't get further than that, unfortunately, but they're returning a lot of the same players coming in. They didn't add much in the offseason. They added Connor Brown up front, a couple depth guys, some PTOs right now, and then defense is pretty much the same. They didn't really change it at all, except Mattias Ekholm will have a full season with the Edmonton Oilers this time, so we'll see how that goes. Obviously led by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. At least two guys have been superstars in the NHL since they came into the league, I think. So they still lead the way. So let's get into the forward group here. And Jim, I'll start with you with the new addition of Connor Brown. Has previous chemistry with Connor McDavid and Junior. Obviously, we're not expecting the same output, but what do you expect from Connor Brown coming into Edmonton?
Yeah, I would say this is exciting. Connor McDavid is clearly excited about this. Connor Brown is clearly excited about this. This is something to be excited about. That said, I would maybe temper expectations on what to look for from Connor Brown this season. I mean, when you look at his last season where he was mostly healthy, he played 64 games with Ottawa and had 10 goals. So it's not like he's going to come in here probably and score 30. Keeping in mind that he's playing with McDavid, he's playing with Leon Draisaitl possibly, he's probably going to go look on the power play. There's a lot of reasons to think that he's going to up his production, but because he missed all of last season or most of last season, and he hasn't played a whole lot of hockey in the last little while, I wouldn't go crazy thinking this guy's going to come in here and all of a sudden be another, Evander Kane scoring in bunches in the second half or the first half of a season. Like, you got to give him time to work his way into this, get used to it. But there's a lot that could be said. You mentioned the chemistry early on. I think that's probably going to exist. It probably shouldn't take too long to get going. And if you know what to do with a player like Connor McDavid and you know where to go, you're going to be on the receiving end of some gravy points. So I think he'll be just fine. I believe he probably could get 20. If 30 is possible, which it could be, I just wouldn't look for that. But 20 is definitely in the realm of expectations here.
Yeah, and on a ridiculously cheap contract, $775,000. So, I think whatever he does is going to be good. Playing with McDavid, I could say probably 20 goals as well. So, all right, Mike, talk to you about the depth guys that kind of brought in. Potentially only one of these guys make the team, but you got guys like Lane Peterson they brought in, potentially fighting for the fourth line spot. You've got two PTOs, Sam Gagne, obviously of the Edmonton Oilers before, not as productive anymore, and then Brandon Sutter coming back, hopefully coming back to the NHL after a couple seasons off. What do you expect from these guys? Do you expect these to make a difference, or are we just kind of, these are just PTOs and we'll see where it goes from there?
Case by case scenario, Lane Peterson, you see that minimum contract and he's that guy that the GM signs and hopes that, please let him make the team. Please let him have a career year, because we don't have any money anywhere else and we're really stretching right now. He's your typical fourth liner. He doesn't have McDavid's speed. He doesn't have Draisaitl's hands. So, you're hoping anything out of there is a positive. Let's go Gagne next. Sam Gagne was someone, I'm from the London area, so he's someone I've seen growing up, seeing him grow up. Always had the hands, always had the skills, never had the wheels. And as the NHL has evolved and gotten much faster the last 15 years, his game has fallen off accordingly, regardless of where, you know, he was in age. So right now, and even there was an article on TSN.ca today, and he was talking about how nothing's guaranteed. I'm just hoping to get out there and get my shot. I don't see Gagne having a real impact this year. I see him as a 13th forward, maybe a guy you keep warm in the AHL to keep his legs fresh. He's going to get through waivers. He's someone that signed this late in the offseason. You don't have to worry about him going on waivers and getting claimed unless a team has a bunch of injuries. But he is someone that if you need to play him, you can put him on a power play, you can hide him on a fourth line, you can shelter his minutes. Sutter to me is the interesting one. Coming off long COVID, you know, missing a lot of time with that. You know, we've seen the issues that Jonathan Toews has had and some other players in different sports as well. So really it's what does he have left in the tank? People will say, well, you know, he's had some time off, his legs will be fresh. It's quite the opposite. You know, this is a guy who's getting near his mid 30s. He played a lot of hard minutes. He was a grinder. He was a fierce battler. They talk about being an old 31, an old 32. That's that kind of player he was to begin with. So this is very much a bit of a Cinderella story. What's he got in the tank? Because he's really what they hope for Lane Peterson. They're hoping that Sutter comes in and is actually the fourth line center, can bring that leadership, can bring that experience, and can be even 90% of what he was. Because if he brings that, then they've got a solid fourth line.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee both these guys get contracts. They're PTOs. So, I mean, it's funny because both these guys are former Canucks as well. I know them. I know them pretty well. I mean, Brandon Sutter, he's, you know, it was unfortunate that he had to go through long COVID because, I mean, even in Vancouver, he wasn't what everyone expected when they traded for him from Pittsburgh. And unfortunately, he had some good years. I mean, everyone was expecting him to be that solid third line center, never really became that. So, I mean, right now, I think expectations are that they come in, provide competition for the other guys, and hopefully one of them make it. Gagne had an okay season with Winnipeg. I mean, he was vying for his leadership there. And, you know, even if he comes in and he's familiar to the organization too. So we'll see how it all goes in training camp for these guys.
Can I add something on the Sam Gagne front? I put in an article that I wrote recently that, and I might be making a bold prediction here, and we'll probably talk about some bold predictions later, but I got a feeling that this is not so much about what he's going to do on the ice for the Oilers. I have this feeling that he's working his way into the doorway to take on another role with this team in another capacity. I think that he'd be very hard pressed to make this team. I like a lot of things about Sam Gagne, but he, on any team in the NHL, the Oilers might be the one where they don't need him, right? Like, because they've got two really good power play units. They've got skill on the shootout. He's a power play guy. He can kill a little bit of penalties, but they don't need that necessarily, right? So the idea, unless he's willing to sign a two-way contract and they use him as depth in the AHL and then maybe bring him up in the event of injuries, like Mike had mentioned, I don't see why he's on this team. So if that's the case, you know, you got CEO Jeff Jackson now coming in, who worked with Dave Gagne, his dad at Wasserman Group. There's a real connection there. I believe the Oilers are probably setting this up so that at some point Sam Gagne's in some sort of, you know, prospecting or scouting role with the Oilers, working into an executive position. I think this is just the beginning of Sam Gagne's next career with the Oilers. I don't think this is about hockey, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, he is 34 years old. He's on the back end of his career. So yeah, we'll see how it all goes in training camp and what his future holds in Edmonton. All right, Jim, you have any other big storylines that you're looking at with this forward group going into the season? I mean, obviously we know McDavid and Draisaitl are going to lead the way, but what needs, do you have any storylines you're kind of following going in?
Well, I mean, there's a couple players when you look at this team, how well they performed last year. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had a career year. He had unbelievable production. I don't know that he's going to be able to sustain that. So how much of a drop-off is he going to have? I'll be watching that. He's kind of really an integral part of that first power play unit. So I believe he's still going to have some major numbers. I just don't imagine it's going to be anything near what he had before. And then on the other side, Evander Kane was missing a good chunk of last season. And I believe he's going to be able to pick it up right where he left off when he was fully healthy. there's a lot of good things going on in Edmonton when it comes to Evander Kane this offseason. Like, he's been sticking around. He's been playing beer league hockey. He's been part of the community. He's really ingrained himself into the community. I think he's just getting set up for what could be, as long as he's healthy and his wrist is good to go, a really, really big year. That's what I'm looking for in terms of the forwards. With the defense, I don't know exactly if they're deep enough. I think Evan Bouchard was a great signing, even though you'd love to have him long term. I think they're going to probably need somebody else before the deadline here. They're not necessarily deep enough, and they're going to probably want to add something else. And then obviously Jack Campbell, can he bounce back? So those are the storylines that I'm watching. There's a handful of things that, you know, we're keeping our eyes on here, but those are the main ones for me.
Yeah, the goaltending is going to be an interesting one. All right, Mike, what about you? Do you have any other big storylines you're kind of watching going into training camp and this season in general?
Everyone takes McDavid and Draisaitl for granted. So what happens if something happens to either of them? They're certainly not getting old yet, but if one of them gets injured, this is suddenly goes from one of the two or three most talented teams in the NHL to just another. Beyond that, you know, I watched Zach Hyman grow up in Toronto, and he really took a seventh round nothing career and made something out of himself. When does he get old? He doesn't play a light style hockey, and his number's starting to get up there. And when he was signed, a lot of fans in Edmonton were up in arms, 8 years for this guy who's never put up X amount of points and all this stuff. Well, 2 years in, he's been phenomenal. He's been worth every dollar and then some. If he gets old this year, that team's in trouble. And that's where, you know, Jim mentioned Kane. That's where you need that better season from Kane. You hope that all of Kane's off-ice distractions are in the rear view mirror. It's a guy that always comes into camp in a phenomenal shape. I mean, comes in at any time you're in phenomenal shape. Whenever he misses hockey, comes in and just starts scoring goals and can skate. So if the engagement from Kane is there, if the mental side is there, they should be okay. Nuge isn't going to put up 100 points again. That was wild. Good for him. First overall pick that found it last year, but hot take, not a chance. On the defense, and maybe I'm jumping into that part, but you had a couple defensemen that played really well last year, Bouchard and Ekholm, especially when they played together, although I think Ekholm could have put anyone in his backpack last year. You need Nurse to step up. You need CC to come back. And this is a guy who's had more bad years than good. So to put a lot on CC's lap, so to speak, is risky. And I think we'll talk more about him later on in another section. What are you going to get from Desjardins? I love the guy. He's 6'7". You know, you'd love to see a late bloomer there. If he became half a Chara, wow. But, you know, what is there? Brett Kulak is better as a 5 than a 4. If you put him in the right role, he's fine. What role will he end up in? There's definitely some questions on this defense, to say the least.
Yeah, like I say, Matthias Ekholm, a full season of this guy, how well he played with Evan Bouchard. I mean, that having a full season of that, that's massive in my opinion. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if they can continue that chemistry together. But it looks like they complement each other really well.
Alan Mitchell of The Athletic, by the way, if people didn't read this, has predicted that Ekholm will finish top 5 in the Norris Trophy voting this year. So he's expecting
like
a big,
he did last year.
Big season from him. Like, if he plays the way he did when he came over to Edmonton, absolutely, he should be in the conversation if he plays that way all year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, before we move on to our quick fire here, I want to talk about the goaltending a bit more. I mean, Stuart Skinner, is he, you know, Jim, is he the de facto number one now, or are we still going to see a tandem with Campbell? Because Campbell's still getting paid $5 million. You really would not like him to be a backup, but what do you see with this tandem going into the season?
This may not be a popular answer, but I think the answer is no. I think they start from scratch. I think Skinner deserves, based on the way he played last season, to be considered the number 1A. And Campbell the 1B, but I don't think that's how it's going to be approached when this season kicks off. I think they want Campbell coming into the season thinking, let's put last year behind us. It was your first, and even Ken Holland said it. He's like, this is kind of what happens sometimes when you get a new goalie and you come into the system and you have a rough first year, but the second year is always tends to be better. And Skinner, I would expect, as well as I think over the long haul of the season, he's going to be as good, if not even better. He might struggle early. So I would say, you know what? You're probably looking at even playing field, switching games on and off, as many for each as the other. So I would say, no, it's probably dead even. I think they're probably going to give both guys the opportunity to earn the starting role. Who gets opening night? Probably Skinner. That said, I think Campbell's got as good a case as any to win the starting job immediately if he has good outings, and I think he will have better outings than he had last year. I know people aren't loving Campbell, especially the way that he played last year, but I think he's got to have a better season. So I wouldn't rule him out of the starting job, and I don't think you want him thinking that going into the year either, right? Like, if his mentality is, man, I'm the backup until I prove otherwise, okay, but why not start these guys off on an even playing field and let him earn it? That's how I see it.
Yeah, I get that for sure. Mike, what do you think about the goaltending? Do you agree that it should be an even playing field, or should we, you know, Skinner should be the starter to start?
Yeah. Matthew, I love these questions. They make me think like a GM, and if you read my stuff, that's all I do. So I'll say one thing that no one will be able to disprove. I was one of the few people who thought Skinner was going to be a beast last year. I didn't necessarily see second in the rookie of the year voting and the Calder, but you know, he'd had a great finish to the year coming in. He had developed steadily in the AHL. And even to that point, there's no reason why goalies are voodoo notwithstanding, he shouldn't continue to improve and evolve. That being said, Jim is bang on, and he quoted Ken Parsons and Ken Holland was a goalie. Ken Holland knows the score. He knows what it's like. He knows that head game. And you don't sign a Jack Campbell without knowing his history, how long it took him to go from a top prospect to a late bloomer. Everybody knows in the hockey world that Jack Campbell beats himself up as much as anybody out there and really needs to be carefully managed mentally. It's never about his skill set. It's all about between the ears with him. That said, Edmonton fans, he survived in Toronto and he did pretty well there. If you can survive in Toronto, you can play anywhere. And this is definitely a situation where they're upstairs saying, we're paying him $5 million a year. He's not our backup until he forces the coach's hand. They're going to make it a level playing field. They're going to give him a shot. Unless Skinner gets hurt, he will be the 1A coming out. He earned it from his play last year, but you can absolutely bet that Campbell will get his chance. And if he has a starting job by November, don't be surprised.
Yeah. What's good about it is that, I mean, I would hope that both of them play well, and then you got two really good goalies, and that's better than just one. So, I mean, you're able to split them and then go into the playoffs with two strong options. That's the best case scenario for the Oilers, right? So we'll see how it goes going into the season and throughout. All right, before we get to the quick fire, we'll start with you, Mike. How does this team stack up in the Pacific Division now? I mean, are they still in the top tier? You got the Vegas Golden Knights, which are probably the top right now. You've got teams like the LA Kings, who arguably got better with Dubois being added. Then you got a bunch of other teams that are kind of in the middle, maybe. What do you think about this Oilers team? Are they the second best in the division, or where do you see them stack up here?
Second best sounds reasonable. You can't say anyone other than Vegas is at the top. Bottom line is Vegas won 32 teams, and they were the only one that hoisted it last year, and their system was flawless. It wasn't just the players. The coaching there is incredible. The system they play, everybody bought in. Who knows if their goaltending is even real or if they could put one of the three of us in and still win. That's how good their system was. They only lost one real player. Barbashev, to me, is an upgrade, if not in the regular season, then certainly in the playoffs on Riley Smith. Unless they're tired, unless they're banged up, which does happen from long playoff runs, you've got to have Vegas at the top. That said, Edmonton's definitely a strong number two. Calgary's a wild card. LA is moving up. I don't like the Dubois trade as much as other people, but that's a different topic for another day. It does make them stronger, certainly on paper, and LA's top nine forward-wise and their depth on defense, they are strong. Who knows about their goaltending? Edmonton is the number two. That said, you know, as we noted, especially with the defense and the goaltending, Edmonton's got some very real questions. This is one of those teams that has to find a perfect balance, and the right players have to be firing. And if they're not, and if they stop buying into the coaching, this is a team that could have a shocking downfall this year.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, this division is on. I mean, there's a few teams still at the bottom, but there are the clear top teams. Jim, what do you think? The Oilers in that top tier, or where do you see them in this division?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the same two teams at the top, but I'm going to take the other approach. I know Mike said you can't see anybody else but Vegas at the top. I'm going to say I think the Oilers are at the top, and there's a couple of reasons that I say that. I've always sort of been one. Vegas is very good. Like, they're very good. But I've always sort of watched for them and waited for them to drop off. And they haven't. There's a lot of reasons to think that they could. Their whole goaltending situation last year was a total disaster, but it just worked out really well for them, right? They play on this edge where they add players and they dump players. And I don't know what their motivation is as an organization other than to win, but they have no real loyalty to anybody. And you never know what they're going to do from game in to game out or from offseason to offseason, who's going to stay and who's going to go. There's always something about this team, even though they just won the Stanley Cup, that I'm kind of like, man, it wouldn't take much for it to get negative in that room or for something to happen where they just sort of fall off the map. So I don't think that's going to happen. But that said, I see the way that the Oilers come into this season motivated to beat Vegas. They don't think they liked it all the way that that ended that series. McDavid and Draisaitl are on a different level. They're already coming into Edmonton, bringing the rest of the team with them to get training and going. I think they're just so motivated to get to that next level that I see them as the favorites. Yes, there are some question marks with the Oilers, and there could be some things that happen with this team that go sideways. You can say that about anybody. Mm-hmm. So if you take the top two stars or you take any one of the major stars on any team and you take them out of the lineup, then of course that team is not going to be nearly as good as you would expect them to be. But I just think this group is more motivated than they've ever been. And I believe that they're already contenders going into this. So I see them, if not above Vegas, it's a tie for me. Mm-hmm. I think those two teams are probably at the top. The rest of the division, I think LA is pretty good, but I'm with Mike. I don't know that I love the moves that they made. Mm-hmm. They're really deep up front, but their goaltending to me is a question mark. They got lost a couple of good players in adding Dubois. So I don't mm-hmm. know what's going on there. Calgary, I don't love what they're doing. Vancouver's obviously going through some stuff, so we don't really know where they're at. San Jose is going to be a disaster. Anaheim's mm-hmm. not going to be good enough yet. So there's just a lot going on in this division. So it's those three teams for me, but I, at the worst, it's a tie between Vegas and Edmonton, and I'm going to give the favor to Edmonton because I'm a total homer. But that's where I see it. But yeah, I think they're right there. They're in the conversation for sure.
They definitely are. I mean, when you have two of the best players arguably in the world, I mean, that's pretty good. Usually it'd be pretty good.
Yep.
All right, let's get to our quick fire round. And these are all fun questions. A lot of these have been made to articles on the Hockey Writers. So let's start with our one or two breakout stars. Mike, we'll start with you. What do you got?
Ryan McLeod at the top of that list. For anyone who says, oh no, he's not a star. We're talking breakout stars, not guys who are making the team. McLeod, I'm going to forgive me for using a baseball analogy. In baseball, they rate on a 20 to 80 scale when you're scouting a player. And anything over 60 is really like top level elite. McLeod's that guy who's kind of a 55 in everything. He's a good skater. He's got some wheels, but he's not going to necessarily beat McDavid in a race. He's got good hands, but he's not going to put in 40 goals. He's good defensively, but he's not Patrice Bergeron. He's that guy who's pretty darn good at everything. And they peak younger, and he this year or next year is going to be the start of his peak. And if it's this year, lucky for Edmonton, because that's someone who can fill in on a wing in a top six role or be a strong third line center. And with Edmonton's depth, you combine him with someone like Nuge or a Hyman on that third line, and you've got a monster third line come playoff time. My other one, and I think Jim might jump on this one too, is Dylan Holloway. Tons of just wheels. He's strong. He's a grinder. If that wrist is fully healed, and we know sometimes wrists don't heal well, but if it is, that's someone that they're looking to get, not just, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes a game from. They need 13, 14 minutes solid top nine production from him. He's another one who could really pick up their depth and keep the prices down, which allows them to do something with the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I love McLeod. His skating is off the charts. So, yeah, I think he could definitely break out this season. All right, Jim, who do you got for breakout stars?
Well, for the sake of being different, I'll go with two other players. Now, Dylan Holloway would have been on my list for sure. My only real concern with him is that the minutes that the coach, Jay Woodcroft, gave him last year were really questionable. Now, I get there was an injury, but I don't know why he played him so little. So I am going to watch for that to see if he gets more ice time this year. For me, though, Philip Roberg is a name that I'm going to really heavily watch. I think this is his year to either make it or break it in Edmonton. So he either plays a lot because they need him to step up and he's really, really solid, or he he plays just so well enough to maybe get traded at the deadline for something else. So Broberg is a guy that I'm going to be watching very closely. I think he's got the ability. I just don't know where his minutes are going to fit and how much he can step up. If he can really get into that role. And I know Mike talked earlier about Brett Kulak and him being a five instead of a four and where these guys all fit. Broberg's a real important part of that equation. So if they can find the right spot for him, he's going to be a big deal this year. The other one that I'm going to go with again on the blue line, Vincent Desharnais. I know people are hard on him the way that some of his games finished last year, but other than Dylan Holloway, who got a lot fewer minutes, Desharnais got a lot of minutes. Like Woodcroft seems to have this confidence in him, even though there were times that he got benched after making mistakes, he would go back to him. He would use him a lot. There were games where Desharnais played a ton of minutes, and for his inexperience, that was a bit of a surprise for me. So I think there's something going on there between Woodcroft and Desharnais where Woodcroft really sees this major potential in this player, whether it's his size or his ability to be physical or whatever the case is, he likes this guy a lot. And so I think there's going to be a longer leash for him than there might be with Dylan Holloway. So Desharnais is going to either figure it out and be really, really good, or we don't see him much this year. Mm. So for me, he's got the ability to be a breakout star just based on what happened last year. I think he's going to get the minutes, though, so we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, Woodcroft coached him in the minors, too, so the trust level is definitely there. All right, back to you, Mike. A player that needs to bounce back from last season.
Is everyone watching this right now screaming Jack Campbell at
their screens? Easy choice.
It's the easy choice. It's not even my top one, though, because as long as Skinner is fine, Campbell can do whatever. Edmonton's got some solid AHL quad A player type depth, and third goalies pass through waivers pretty regularly. I'm not worried about Campbell. Evander Kane is my guy. When they first picked him up, he came in and he played like, you know, say the best power forward in the league, and someone's going to go, oh, well, no, so-and-so's better. Evander Kane was as good as it got on the wing. Regardless of what he had going on in his personal life that year, they picked him up. He was incredible. Every time he touched the puck, it seemed like he went in. He drew penalties. He was upset in the D on the other team. He was upset in everyone, and he was untouchable. Last year was a different story. I mentioned it before, so I don't want to get too much into that again. Bottom line is, if Evander Kane shows up this year, it makes McDavid's life easier. It makes Dreisaitl's life easier. He opens up space for them. He opens up space for Nugent Hopkins to try to hit 100 again, for Hyman to do his thing, for McLeod. He is their X factor. Maybe he's their X factor, but I'm jumping ahead. He is their bounce back that they need for sure.
All right, Jim, who do you got for a bounce back player?
Man, I keep going to the blue line for some reason, but I'm going with Cody. I'm going Cody Ceci. Did I play D? No, I did not play D. But I think his injury last year was a big deal. I don't think people are giving that enough or weighing that enough into the equation as to why he had a little bit of a struggle last year. He wasn't terrible. He just wasn't what he was the first year he came over. I know when he came from Pittsburgh and then Toronto before that, and Ottawa before that, everybody saw him as an offensive guy. And then when he came in, he was supposed to replace Adam Larson. Everyone was like, no, there's no way he's going to do that. And he kind of did. And so everyone's like, man, Cody Ceci is much better than we ever thought that he was going to be. And then he had last season, which wasn't as good. So people are like, oh man, Cody Ceci. And then the name that you saw out there in trade rumors a lot this summer was Cody Ceci's name. So I think you're going to need him to be that top four guy that he was the first season he came over. Even if he's not as good as that first year, somewhere better than last year and close to that first year would be just fine. He can partner him with anybody. He's reliable. He's steady. That's the bounce back, because you need that top four in Edmonton for this team to be successful. They're going to score. They're going to get a lot of goals. They need to keep pucks out of their own net. And if he's on his game and he's better than he was last year, they're in good shape. So I see Ceci is having a bounce back year.
Yeah, that'd be good for him, especially. Yeah, if you can have a strong top four and like you said, Edmonton scores goals. So it's all good if they can defend. All right, Mike, X factor. You mentioned Kane. Is that your X factor as well?
My own script, actually. You know, I got people written down like Brown, Sutter, Campbell, McLeod. But honestly, you know, going from what Jim said, a lot of why Ceci will be successful or not this year, a lot of why that defense will work this year or not, will be how it's coached. If they're giving the tough minutes to Ekholm And if Bouchard can play those tough minutes against top pairs, it makes Darnell Nurse's life much easier. Darnell Nurse is a far better defenseman than he's given credit for. Is he worth 9 million? Analytically, no. You know, eye test, no. But he's worth 6 or 7. He's the real deal. He's a top pair defenseman. He's just not a true number one. If you're asking him to play the best pairings and you're putting CeCe with him, who is, as well as he played that 1 year, he is not as good defensively as Adam Larson. And if you're asking those guys to play those tough minutes, you're in trouble. So it depends on what position the coach has put these guys in. Are they set up to succeed or are they set up to fail? If Ekholm can carry the water on that top pair, you're going to see CeCe have a great year and everyone's going to love Darnell Nurse again. And they're going to say, oh, it might be worth it after all. So that's my X factor.
It's a good and Kane. One. Yeah. Yeah. I've got two, whatever he already said. Yeah. So there's a couple X factors there. All right, Jim, what do you got as an X factor for this season?
Well, I like Mike's answer for sure. I'm with him on that one. For me, I think there's two things we're going to watch for this season. One, that they have a good start. I think the Oilers need to be able to back up what they're saying when they talk about how they're motivated and they're energized and they're ready to go. I think a good start for them this season is key to all of that, and they need to take advantage early and get a nice lead in the Pacific Division and then look like contenders immediately. After that, I think the next big moment to watch is probably the trade deadline because they have no real cap space this summer to do anything else. They've maxed it out. Whether there's an LTIR situation, you knock on wood that nobody gets seriously injured or anything like that. But I think there are some players who have not signed yet this year or some that may be looking for changes of scenery with their contracts expiring, where the Oilers will have some wiggle room and some flexibility with their cap and prorated salaries and guys taking really limited 1 year deals just to show me kind of thing so they can get another contract when the cap goes up this summer. I think the deadline could be very big, even though it doesn't look like the Oilers have a lot of room to play. I think they'll be players. I think they'll figure it out. And if they can add the exact right piece to this puzzle that they didn't change a lot this summer, that could be massive for Edmonton. Like they go into the playoffs on a roller and then they add the right piece going in, whether that's on the blue line or at forward, they're going to be tough to beat.
For sure. I mean, Ekholm almost became that last season, right? But just hit that Vegas team and and the rest is history.
Yep.
All right. I'll stay with you, Jim, on this one. A rookie or a prospect that could surprise and make the roster out of training camp. Now, there's not a lot of spots for these guys, but someone could surprise.
Well, and to be honest with you, there's probably not a lot of prospects either
that
you can really look at and go, these guys are going to get the chance to play this year. Like, it's not just because of the spots, but because the Oilers don't really have a ton of prospects. Like they traded Reece Schaefer. They've got a couple people, but they've been drafting later in the rounds in the last few years. So they haven't been picking up these pieces that you're going to look at immediately making a jump to the NHL. That's it. If I had to pick somebody, it's probably going to be Raphaël Lavoie. He's the most experienced guy in the AHL. He had two solid seasons with them. If anybody's going to probably get a shot and make a jump here, it'll be him, especially if they need some goal scoring. So that's the person. I don't have a whole lot more to add to that because, like I said, there's not really a ton that you can talk about with this team when it comes to prospects because they're in such a win now mode. They're not going to be relying on these guys. Like for they sure. are absolutely looking at veterans and people who can help immediately, and they're not going to take major chances other than like when Mike said earlier that somebody like Elaine Peterson could be effective because they have no money, right? Yeah. So if they're looking for that piece, it might have somebody coming up from the farm to give it a shot, but I don't think you're going to see much of those guys.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a real surprise then if one of them does. Mike, do you got someone that could potentially do that in training camp?
Oh, let me tell you about Xavier Borgo. I'm kidding. I clearly lost the rock, paper, scissors before this to get to talk about the only prospect who might have a chance to make this team. Can we talk about Doug Gilmore? Like, is that a thing? No, we can't. Okay. It's Lavoie or bust. This team has no prospects ready to step in. It's part of why, again, I mentioned that unique balance that they have to hit. They need their existing players to show up. I felt like Jim was hinting at like a Thomas Tatar. You're going to see me on the Pittsburgh call too. Pittsburgh clearly wants him. That's a player who, again, not a rookie, but I got no rookies to talk about. Imagine if they could get him for $1 million and put him in a top six or a top nine, then the strong only gets stronger there. There's not going to be much rookie impact on this team this year.
Yeah. Well, they're in win now mode, so they don't necessarily need it. But the next question is, though, these guys aren't NHL guys. Mike, do you have a prospect that everyone should be watching in the system? Now, granted, you guys said, I mean, they don't have the strongest prospect system, but they do have some guys that are around that are kind of interesting. So who do you got that everyone should be watching?
Yeah, it's Borgo for me. You know, they draft him in the first round, and that whenever you see a first round pick, you automatically think, oh, they could be a first line center. They could be a first line, top line, whatever their position. Right now, that's not where he's trending. He looks more like a third liner. So if you're watching their system, you're watching his season. Is he, and forgive me, I forget if he's still in the queue or if he's going to be graduating to the AHL. Jim, you might know him. Feel free to jump in. If he's in the queue, is he dominating? If he's in the AHL, how strong a rookie year is he going to have? Because it's going to start to show you what the finished product is going to look like. And Edmonton fans need to not be surprised and really temper their expectations when his ceiling is a poor man's Ryan McLeod, as opposed to a second line center who can put up 60 points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to answer your question, he's in Bakersfield now. He played 62 games last year, had 13 goals. So he's probably not at that first call up, but he's probably in the conversation where you're looking at, you know, a handful of guys from that team. But yeah, he's trying to make his way in the AHL at this point.
All right, Jim, do you have someone that everyone should be watching in the system? I mean, I like Carter Savoy, but...
Yeah, and you know what? I sort of cheated on this answer just for the sake of having something different to talk about.
Did
and because
Tatar?
No. But what I did do was I bent the rules a little bit on what a prospect probably is. Some people are going to watch this video and go, that's not a prospect. But to me, only because he's only played 69 games in the NHL, I qualified Phil Broberg as still a prospect for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with him. And I mentioned it earlier because I think it's boom or bust for him. I think when you talk about players to watch, it's not necessarily, you know, production or what they're doing on the ice. It's what's going to happen with them this year, right? So for me, Broberg is the guy that either stays and really elevates himself and cements his way, and he's like an Oiler moving forward, or he's traded. So for me, that's why I'm watching him, because I'm like, if he has a good year and he comes in and he's ready to go and he's healthy because he's had some injury issues and he's a real impactful part of this team, even in a more limited role, the Oilers are going to want to keep him, because like we talked about earlier, they don't have a ton of prospects that they're moving forward with this future. Broberg could be in that conversation, but if he's not, I think the Oilers want to make an upgrade, and Broberg's the piece you use to get it. So that's why I'm going to be watching him. I still think he's a prospect. He hasn't played much. He's been around for a while, but he still hasn't played a lot. So that's who I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's not, you're not cheating too much. I mean, he is pretty much a prospect, even though a lot of people say it's 50 games in a season or whatever, 25 is not a prospect anymore, but he's very limited. So I would still call him kind of a prospect for sure.
Yeah, he's had a cup of coffee in a few seasons now, right? So it's kind of like, I get the battle there with what is actually a prospect. If he's played multiple years in the NHL at this point, then is he really still a prospect? I understand that too. So if people want to rag on me for that, I get it. That's cool.
All right. Jim, we'll stay with you. This is probably easy, especially for the forwards. Well, maybe not. Drysdale could do it. Who's going to lead the team in scoring?
McDavid.
Easy.
Should I go with anything else? No. The question with McDavid isn't it, will he do it with, but
Warren
how much?
Fogel.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is sometimes you watch Warren Fogel and you're like, is that the number? Is that McDavid? Like, he moves around pretty good. So you're like, nah. But then you realize he doesn't put it in like McDavid does. But, the question is, how many points will McDavid get? I know some people are projecting he'll have a down season, not down as in like won't get still get 130, 140 points, just won't score like he did last year. I think he does more. Like the ceiling for this guy is so unlimited. He can go as high as he wants to go, right? Every year that he chooses to be more impactful at a certain part of his game, he is. So if he wants to score 50, he will. If he wants to get 100 assists, he will. So it's just a matter of whether or not he decides to do it. And when he's on his game and he decides to go, assuming all things and he's healthy, the sky's the limit for him. So it's McDavid for me. No other choice.
What about on defense?
I'm going to go Evan Bouchard. I know that Mike was saying when you read his past work on somebody like Stuart Skinner, I've always been very whatever with Evan Bouchard. Now, he does make some mistakes and he has some brain farts on defense every once in a while, but I have believed for the longest time that he has the ability to be a major difference maker on this team. Are there questions about his defense? Sure, but he's figuring it out. And when you have a partner like Duncan Keith and then you have a partner like Mattias Ekholm, you have that experience to help you round out your game a little bit. But people who, like, I saw the ESPN predictions for the fantasy this year, and they had about like 40 points. And I'm like, what are they, crazy? Like, that's, there's no way. There's like four more points on the power play than he had last year, which he only played not even half the year as the quarterback on the first unit. He's going to play all year there this year. So if he doesn't hit 60 points, I'll be shocked. Like, I think Bouchard's going to be a 60-point player for sure.
Yeah, it's easy to be on that power play and get points.
Yeah, just all he's got to do is either give it or shoot it. That's it. And yeah. The rest, it just goes in, right?
Right. Michael, you got McDavid leading the way forwards-wise, and what do you got?
I'd love to be hot take or dry sidle guy, but that's ridiculous. McDavid, as far as scoring goes, he's this generation's Gretzky, Lemieux, even Jagr, those three that dominated from 80 to 2000. McDavid's our guy this generation. You remember, you know, 11, 12 years ago, the whispers about Sidney Crosby, oh, he can't score, he's just a playmaker. And Crosby said, hold my beer and put up 50. You know, McDavid did the same thing last year. And I'm with Jim completely. If McDavid wants to put up 70 this year, he will. He simply will. He's a force of nature. If he wants 100 assists, he's going to tell the guys to get open and get ready, and he'll do it. And if he wants to do both, he will. Doesn't mean they'll win a Stanley Cup, not necessarily, but McDavid can score. Of course, he will be the one to lead the team, and he should lead the league without question.
Yeah. What about on defense? You got Bouchard, or are you picking someone else?
Bouchard 60 to 65 points all day, and if he puts up 73, we're all going to look at each other and go, was that really that much of a surprise? They were, I'm going off the top of my head here, they were 31.7% or something like that with Tyson Barrie, and then it went up into the 32s when Bouchard took over. There was no dip. And that dressing room was sad when Barry left because they loved him. Bouchard is that good. And as far as his defense goes, you know, not just playing with Keith and playing with Ekholm, he was coached by Dale Hunter and had Mark Hunter in his ear as well in London. He had as good of coaching as you're ever going to find at the junior level, and those resources that he can still reach out to at any time. He's always just been that player that's a little lackadaisical in his decision-making, going to get the puck. There's no, you know, Lidstrom could do it where he had no pulse, but Lidstrom moved faster. Bouchard has to be a little more decisive in his decision-making. He can do it, though. It's just a matter of how comfortable he is and will he choose. And this is the year for him to step up and show that he's a top pair D.
Yeah, we'll see if both those go. Well, McDavid most likely, but Bouchard will be interesting to see. All right, a couple more here. Jim, what do you got for someone that could be traded by the deadline here?
Well, I already talked about Philip Broberg, so I won't dig into him too much. This next one might be a little bit off the board for some people, but I'm going to pick Derek Ryan. I don't know that they want to trade him. I don't think they would actually want to trade him. They like him a lot. He's a real utility player. He's not going to complain about his role, whether he's playing every night or he's not playing every night. He would probably clear waivers if you were to put him on. Like, he's that guy that you are pretty safe to have around in any situation. At the same time, there's probably a couple teams that would look at him and go, well, he's not the worst player for us to pick up if we got to make a deadline move, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember back in like 2006 when the Oilers traded like a Marty Riesner and they picked up, you know, Dwayne Rolison and all these, like, you're going to use players like that if you're not moving picks and prospects to get something that you need, because the other team's going to be like, well, you got to give me something. Mm-hmm. And Derek Ryan is something, right? Like, he's got that ability to be useful and he's cheap. So if there's going to be a move there, it could be Ryan. But if he's playing really well, I don't know why you would move him. But if the opportunity is there for somebody to really come in as an upgrade and you don't know who else you're going to trade, Derek Ryan's probably in the conversation.
Yeah, it would be a good deadline pickup for a lot of playoff teams for sure. But like I said, the Oilers are doing well. I don't know if they want to trade him because he could be that guy for them. So
he's got so many uses, right? He's like the utility guy from the toolbox. He's just like, put him wherever and he'll figure it out. Even if you stick him in the top six in a short limited time, he can play there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Mike, who you got as someone that could be trade bait at the deadline here?
Oh, before we get to Cody Ceci, you know, Ryan is 35 going on 36. He's a total, you know, as Jim said, he's a total Swiss Army knife. He's an analytics darling. You can put him on the third line and be okay. You can put him on the fourth line and have a strong fourth line. Does he age out? Because if he ages out, they're going to trade him or waive him. And then they've got to hope that they can either find someone cheap from another team or that someone, one of those young guys that we're not talking about, surprises them in the minors. Mm-hmm. Ryan's an interesting choice for sure. CeCe and Fogle are my guys. You know, Fogle, they've been talking about trading him practically since the day they acquired him. Would love to revisit that trade. he showed up at the second half of last year. And in the playoffs, though, again, another guy, like Jim said, he's a good skater, rough hands, but he does a lot of solid things. If he stays on his game, he's fine. If he doesn't, that 2.75 million is going to look like a big albatross for a team that has no cap space, and they will try to move him and they'll pay extra to upgrade. Same with CeCe. Again, if he's put in a position to succeed, he'll probably do fine. He was solid in Toronto and he was really good that first year in Edmonton. But if they have him play rough minutes and he doesn't show, don't be surprised to hear a lot of noise about him starting in December.
Mm-hmm. Those are all three of those guys are interesting ones to kind of keep an eye on throughout the season for trades. All right, last one of the show, and this is always a fun one. Jim, a bold prediction or a hot take for this season?
I don't know if this is necessarily all that bold, to be totally honest with you, but I'm going to say that the Oilers have 5 30-goal scorers on this team, maybe 6. And that would be incredible to have 6 30-goal scorers on this team. And I'll tell you who they are. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, Evander Kane, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and potentially one of Connor Brown, it's a stretch, or Evan Bouchard. It'd be shocking if a defenseman gets 30 goals, but if there's anybody who could have the possibility of doing it on a number one power play that gets a lot of looks and has been all-worldly, like broke the record last year, and his bomb, don't put it past him. I'm going to go with 5, but the bold part of this prediction is that there's 6 30-goal scorers on this team.
There we go. There's some bold stuff there. Mike, what do you got? A bold prediction.
Stuck on that Evan Bouchard one, but hey, if Morgan Rielly once scored 20 with that waffle, Bouchard could definitely put 30 back with that cannon. I'm gonna go back to what's important here is the Stanley Cup, and Edmonton is a will they or won't they team, and I don't think they've got it. There's too many things that have to fall into place perfectly. There's too many question marks. There's not enough cap space, and I just don't have the faith in Ken Holland that, you know, we would have had in him during his peak Detroit time. And honestly, not only are they not winning, let's talk about how we get one step closer. When I was a kid and Gretzky got traded, the impossible happened. And once Gretzky got traded, anybody can get traded. And if you've ever read any of our comment sections and we talk about a trade, oh no, that could never happen. That could never happen. Gretzky got dealt. Anybody can go. And it's not necessarily that they get traded. McDavid's got 3 years left on his contract. Leon's got 2. When they don't win, they start to feel that clock ticking. Mm-hmm. And that pushes them one step closer out the door.
That's some bold predictions right there. All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Mike, for coming on the show and talking Edmonton Oilers for this season here. We'll see how they do. And what we're talking about at the end of next season. But thanks for joining. Mike, give us your social media and where everyone can find your stuff here.
I have an Instagram at Mike Cranwell. I haven't posted on it much lately, but if you want to see old videos of me doing martial arts and meeting Doug Gilmore, it's there. That's really about it.
All right. And Jim, where can everyone find you?
Well, obviously, you can check out my work at the Hockey Writers if you want to follow me on Twitter, whatever they're calling it now, x.com. Whatever, you can follow me at the Jim Parsons. And I put the word the in there because, no, I am not the guy from the Big Bang Theory. And so you can follow me there, too. But, yeah, I'm all over the Hockey Writers every day.
All right. Sounds good. So make sure to check out thehockeywriters.com for all Oilers coverage throughout the season and in the preseason coming up to it, as we've got a lot of preview posts going on. We got preview stuff all throughout the website. So make sure you're checking all that out. Give this video a like, throw the comments in the section below. You can answer all those quick fire questions yourself and interact with us there. And, follow, subscribe to the Hockey Writers YouTube channel if you haven't already. And we'll just keep counting down the days until the season begins and we can start talking about hockey actually happening. And until next time, we'll see you on another episode of the Hockey Writers Roundtable.